Major funding for the connection is provided by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. The Bush administration is changing its aid equation. In a surprising move that has human rights activists cheering, Washington is refusing Egypt's request for $130 million in additional aid, protesting against Cairo's prosecution of Saad ad-Din Ibrahim. He's a sociologist and human rights activist. Now, since the signing of the Camp David Accords, Egypt has benefited from Washington's largesse to the tune of about $2 billion a year, a tidy sum second only to Israel's subsidy. This year, Egypt wanted more, and Washington seemed fully prepared to comply until an Egyptian court sentenced Ibrahim, an aged and ailing man, for defaming the nation of Egypt abroad and for embezzlement. Human rights activists say it's about time the U.S. started walking the walk on human rights. But others, including Egyptian government officials, call the decision naive, misguided, and dangerous. A silly slap on the wrist that undermines American relations with an important Mideast ally at a critical time. Connection listeners, do you buy Washington's new aid equation? Is linking aid to human rights the best way to achieve democratic change? Our telephone number, 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. My guests today include Mustafa El Said. He is a professor of political science at Cairo University. He joins us from a studio in Washington, D.C. And Neil Hicks is also with us. He's the Middle East Program Director at the Lawyers Committee for Human Rights. He joins us from New York City. And Neil, I'll get you to start us off, if you can, with an explanation of why it is that the arrest and conviction of Saad ad-Din Ibrahim has attracted such attention.
Well, good morning. Saad ad-Din Ibrahim is a very prominent person in Egypt. He's someone very much associated with the independent human rights movement, but he's also a very well-known scholar and a public figure. So his arrest has got the attention of many people in Egypt, but also around the world. He's well-known to foreign diplomats, to journalists, and to people in my line of work in the human rights business. So he's a well-known international figure. So his imprisonment will not go unnoticed.
And Mustafa El Said, I assume this is a man that you know from your work in Cairo?
I do know him very well because I teach at the American University in Cairo, in addition to Cairo University, and I have known him for a long time. I used to meet him, and we shared panels together talking about the future of democracy in Arab countries, the state of civil society in the Arab world. So I know him quite well.
Now, there's some dispute, Mr. El Said, about the charges. The Egyptian government officials are saying, well, look at the embezzlement, look at the misuse of foreign funds, money that came his way from the European nations. And human rights activists are saying, well, that's all nonsense. It's really just about the way that he's accused of tarnishing Egypt's image abroad. Should we be confused by that, or is he simply a victim of Mubarak's displeasure?
No, the problem is how we interpret this notion of tarnishing the image of Egypt abroad, because Dr. Saad ad-Din Ibrahim wrote reports about elections in Egypt, about the status of Copts in Egypt, and I think his work is a scientific, scholarly work. Of course, it does depict certain negative aspects of the Egyptian political system, but he's not the only one who is saying this. In fact, Egyptian courts have annulled results of elections in 1984, 1987, and have declared the electoral law to be unconstitutional. So he's not the only one to say that, you know, there's much to be desired in terms of fairness of elections in Egypt. The Coptic question also has been object of debates by many people in the country.
That's his support for study of the Coptic Christians living in Egypt?
Yes. So the Egyptian government considers talking about these matters abroad tarnishing the image of Egypt. But, you know, others would consider this to be just scientific work, and it is the duty of committed social scientists to point to problems in their countries and to point also to the way to overcome these problems.
Neil Hicks, he's not the first man to be jailed in Egypt for this type of study. In fact, a number of academics before him, many associated with the Muslim Brotherhood, have also been jailed for their political beliefs. So refine that first answer of yours a little bit further for me. Why the case of Ibrahim, why is it attracting so much attention at this particular moment?
Well, first of all, the charges themselves do bear some further examination. The charge of embezzlement of the European Commission. The European Commission itself has submitted affidavits to the Egyptian courts stating that the funds which it granted to the research centre headed by Saadeddine Ibrahim had not been embezzled, and that, in fact, all funds were accounted for properly. So as far as the donor agency was concerned, there was no crime there. The other two offences on which he was convicted, this one of tarnishing Egypt's image abroad and the other one of receiving foreign funding without permission, we think both these offences should not really be offences under the criminal law, and they have been employed in an arbitrary manner here. As Mustafa was indicating, many people say the same kind of thing that Saadeddine Ibrahim says and do not get prosecuted for it. So charging him is a kind of selective prosecution. And similarly, many institutions receive foreign funds without any authorization from the authorities, and they do not get prosecuted. So again, it's a kind of selective prosecution. Now, to answer the question you asked, I think that the government decided to target Saadeddine Ibrahim, firstly because he's such a prominent activist in the civil society movement. So by targeting him, they can intimidate everybody else, because everybody else will look at this and think, well, if they can go after somebody so well-known, somebody who is friends with the president himself, somebody who has good connections with the Americans and with Western governments, then no one is safe, because all of these things are thought of as protecting people who are active in the civil society movement. So all of these connections that Saad had and has have not been able to protect him. So that's a very chilling message to a non-governmental human rights movement.
And Mustafa El Said, one of the things that you teach at Cairo University is human rights. So from your perspective, is this a good move by the American administration at this time to say, you know, that we're going to withhold foreign aid because we don't like the way that you're treating human rights activists in Egypt?
No, in fact, I do also teach politics of foreign aid, and I find that the use of foreign aid as an instrument of foreign policy is not very effective. The amount of aid that Egypt gets is very small, in fact, compared to all the foreign currencies that Egypt gets out of its exports and invisible exports. And, you know, this sum of money, $130 million, is not really much. So I don't think this would be very effective. But from a human rights point of view, I think the record of the American government on human rights also leaves much to be desired.
The record of the American government on human rights as we look at it since September 11th with the detainment of people here? Are you talking about a longer-term
yes,
record?
Yes, and before September the 11th also. You know, the case, well, there is a famous case in Egypt of an Egyptian, Abdullah Higazi, who has been imprisoned for 1 month, and I don't know, a sort of false confession was given to the judges, and nothing has been done about it. There are other cases of people who are imprisoned in Guantanamo, Cuba, and even their names are not known. But on the case of human rights in Egypt, the U.S. government did not say anything about other violations of human rights affecting members of the Muslim Brotherhood or the fairness of elections. So the intervention by the U.S. in this particular case to be also quite selective.
But are you also saying that it could be troublesome, that it may in fact do something to fuel the fundamentalists because the U.S. has selectively chosen Saadeddine Ibrahim's case?
I think the fundamentalists do not need anything to fuel them, because the American policy in the Middle East in general, you know, causes discontent and frustration among, in fact, all Arabs, fundamentalists and non-fundamentalists alike. The U.S. policy on Palestine, on Iraq, is seen to be reflecting the point of view of, you know, special groups in the U.S. And I remember an article written by Samuel Huntington years ago, in which he said that, you know, after the end of the Cold War, U.S. foreign policy has been hijacked by special interest groups. So this is well known in the Arab world, and nobody, you know, has to explain foreign policy of the U.S. to the Arabs. But, of course, I mean, the Islamists would take this to be another instance of U.S. one-sided policy in the Middle East.
Neil Hicks, foreign aid as a ineffective tool of foreign policy. Do you buy that?
Well, I agree with much of what Mustafa has said, but I do differ with him on this specific point of whether the administration was right to take this step with respect to the Saadeddine Ibrahim case. I do think it's the right step, but I think it's just the beginning, and I'll try to explain why. First of all, I think we should look at the Saadeddine Ibrahim case not as a case about Saad himself, but it is a case which symbolizes the restriction of democracy and of space for free inquiry and freedom of expression and the activity of non-governmental organizations in Egypt that has been going on for the last 10 years in particular. There has been no progress. In fact, there's been a regression in democracy in Egypt. And it's proper, I think, for the United States to be concerned about that in its foreign assistance program, one of the objectives of which is precisely to promote these values of democracy and open government and participation.
Can I just bring you to the point, though, that Mr. Al-Sayed's making, that it's pretty thin gruel for the Bush administration to be lecturing an Arab country on human rights in the months after September 11th?
I do understand Mustafa's points about the failings of the United States government in the human rights field. This is something which our organization has been very active on since September the 11th, as many civil rights organizations here in the United States have been. Of course, we're concerned about the constriction of civil rights here at home. And that sends, not only is it worrying from a domestic perspective, but it sends a terrible message around the world, particularly to U.S. allies, particularly to U.S. allies like Egypt. Mm-hmm. We have the example in Egypt of military courts being used to prosecute government opponents. And this is something which human rights organizations have been criticizing for many years. The U.S. State Department has been criticizing for many years. And then after September the 11th, of course, our own government stands up and says it would like to use military courts in the war against terrorism. So this, we think, undermines the work that we've been trying to do for many years in Egypt and similar countries.
Do you see the move then as an aberration or as a significant shift in U.S. policy? Are you looking for more of this as a result?
Well, I'd like to see more explanation, and I'd like to see it linked explicitly to the U.S. policy to promote democracy and human rights and respect for the rule of law in the region. On June the 1st, President Bush made a very important speech at West Point, where he spelt out very specifically his vision for the Muslim world and for Arab governments, where the governments would respect the wishes of their people, where human rights would be respected, where tolerance would be respected, where moderation would be promoted. This, I think, is the kind of language that needs to be supported by action.
And your supporters would say that this is the action that is required. Connection listeners, do you agree that there's a new message coming from Washington that the use of foreign aid as a means of enforcing foreign policy is the proper way to go? Our number's 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. My name's Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection from NPR. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. My name's Dick Gordon. 63-year-old human rights activist Saadeddine Ibrahim sits in jail in Cairo this morning. There was a significant criticism around the world from human rights activists after his second conviction, in part for his role in tarnishing the image of Egypt abroad, as it's been reported in the press there. Late last week, President Bush said that he was going to withhold a request of Egypt for $130 million in foreign aid as a protest against that. Connection listeners, is that the sort of policy that you expect from the administration? 1-800-423-8255 is the number to join us in this conversation. With me today, Mustafa El-Sayed, he's professor of political science at Cairo University. Neil Hicks is director of the Middle East Program, of Middle East Program Lawyers Committee for Human Rights. And we're joined on the line by Ambassador Ned Walker. He was U.S. Ambassador to Egypt from 1984 to 1988. Ambassador, do you see it as a shift? Is this really a change, or how do you interpret this move?
Yeah, it's a exercise in frustration. I mean, the administration has been in touch with the Egyptian government at the highest levels on this case for any number of months, and does not feel that it got real satisfaction. The question of the law itself is problematic because it is so subjective. I mean, we're talking about defaming the state of Egypt. That's a highly political charge, and one could even say that the trial and the arrest of Saadettin Ibrahim did more damage to Egypt than anything that he could have possibly done. So it doesn't pass the test of logic.
But run this through the diplomatic test that you understand it to be. Has the American administration created a precedent here that it may have to live up to in terms of its distribution of foreign aid to countries like Pakistan, to China, to Israel, to any other nation that is the recipient of U.S. foreign aid? Has something changed in a fundamental way as a result of this case?
Well, first, this was not a challenge to the existing aid or assistance to Egypt. It was a special request that was based on a request that had come from Israel as well. Now it appears that neither request is going to be provided. But I think it is a signal that the administration is prepared to use its leverage wherever it has it, particularly in the defense of American citizens, but also in the case of trying to encourage countries to increase their openness to non-governmental action and to distribution of power. And let's keep in mind that this is a principal one of the objectives of the aid program in Egypt is to build up on non-governmental organizations, help them do local work, women's rights and women's concerns, things like this. And when the government restricts the operations of non-governmental organizations, it hurts the entire aid program. So I think there is a direct linkage here.
Okay, but we're looking at two perspectives at this point, if I understand it correctly. One, that it's high time the United States began to back up its talk of enforcing democratic change, and that this is a positive move. And the other, that this may in fact damage relations between Egypt and the United States. Which one do you buy?
Well, I think it's a good signal, frankly. I don't think that it'll damage the basic relationship between Egypt and the United States. We have too much at stake on each side for that. But it's a good reminder that we do care about our citizens, and we are going to do our effort to protect them, and that we do care about the development of democracy, not just because of our own ideas about democracy, but because we firmly believe that it is in the interest of the countries involved that they expand the representation in their governance and that they build a more stable base for the future.
Can I just ask you to be a little more precise there? You talked about backing our citizens. Saadettin Ibrahim holds joint Egyptian
right.
and American citizenship. Are you saying that the move would not have been made if he held simply an Egyptian passport?
I think that is quite possible, yeah. Probable and very likely. That's my experience, that we have a much higher standard of obligation to our own citizens or to people who have even dual citizenship than we do to foreigners.
Connection listeners, our number is 1-800-423-8255. We're talking about a change, a shift in relations between the United States and Egypt over the case of Saadettin Ibrahim. And we're going first to Madison, Wisconsin. Amy's on the line. Hi, Amy.
Hi.
Thanks for calling.
I don't mean to take the conversation a little bit off track, but I do want to say that I think the administration is having a double standard here between Arab countries and Israel. I have lobbied my own representatives to cut off funding from Israel because of its violations of human rights in terms of the occupation, violation of international law, the fact that they are perpetrating collective punishment against the Palestinians, again against international law, using human shields, which has just happened a few days ago, again against international law. And also the Arab citizens of the state of Israel do not have rights equal with the Jewish citizens. There are a lot of human rights violations going on in Israel, but we keep flooding the Israelis with money. And I think if we cut that off, we could have a tremendous influence on what goes on in that country and maybe actually promote peace in the region.
Ambassador Ned Walker, part of the decision of the United States is going to raise questions like Amy's about whether or not what's applied to Egypt should also be applied to Israel. And without sort of buying into any kind of parallel there, is the administration going to have to answer some of these questions?
Well, I think the administration should answer some of these questions, but the fact is that we did not dip into the standard aid package that we've given to Egypt, and as I understand it, the Israelis won't be getting their extra package this year either. That begs the question, of course. There are problems in Israel, and I think you'll find a lot of Israelis will say there are as well. And whether or not to use aid as a negative incentive, I think it's problematic. I think your general approach and...
But isn't that exactly what's being done?
I think not. This is a specific case, and you've got a 130 million request from Egypt, which was supplemental to the normal amount. This is the case of a U.S. citizen, granted also an Egyptian citizen, and a sense that our aid program was being undercut by some pending legislation on non-governmental arc. It was a shot across the bows, but I don't believe that it has a serious implication for the standard aid package. I think that it's much better to start using our aid, targeting our aid towards the building of democracy, the building and construction of the necessary underpinnings for democracy in a positive way. And that's certainly something that I hope that the review and the aid program in Egypt is going to emphasize. With Israel, our discussions have been traditionally done in private. We do put out the human rights report once a year. I believe it's been pretty good ever since, for the last few years anyway, in terms of calling Israel on issues that we don't agree with. We'll have to see what this year's report looks like.
Mustafa El Sayed, professor of political science at Cairo University. Amy's question raises that of whether or not the policy of the withholding of aid as a result of the decision last week will now be or should now be applied to Israel as well as Arab countries like Egypt. Is that a question that you see will end up being central to this debate?
Yeah, I think it is central to this debate, but I don't think this is going to happen because, you know, the foreign policy of any country is a function of many other factors, including the national interest of this country and how it is defined by the ruling groups in this country, by the government in this case. Mm-hmm. And if withholding of foreign aid for, you know, human rights considerations contradicts this definition of the national interest or, you know, the domestic interests of the rulers, this is not going to happen. So I think, you know, linking human rights to foreign policy has been always very problematic. Governments prefer their strategic interests, their economic interests, their, you know, domestic support if they clash with human rights considerations abroad.
1-800-423-8255 is our number. Amy, thanks for your call. To Boston now. Richard's on the line. Hello, Richard.
Hi, good morning, and good morning to your guest. I know both of them. This is Richard Norton from Boston University. I'm glad to be with you. I'd like to make a couple of comments. One, I think it's important that we not forget there are four other people in jail with Saladin, and there are countless other hundreds in jail under similar circumstances in Egypt. That's the first point. The second point is that I think there's a real danger here that this case is going to be much too focused on Saadeddine Ibrahim. And Ambassador Walker's comments very much run in that direction as well. The fact of the
why would it be dangerous if it focused too much on this one particular man?
Well, let me go back to the period just before Saad was arrested. I happened to be in Egypt at that point, 1999 and 2000. I was with his think tank in Cairo. And it was during that period that the government was building a very strong public relations campaign precisely against Saadeddine Ibrahim and his center. It was characterized in one Egyptian paper as a spy center, for example. And the government has, in some measure, succeeded in painting him as an enemy of the state, number one. Number two, he has also succeeded in painting his programs as running against Egyptian interest. Now, if the U.S. government focuses in an isolated way on the freeing of Saadeddine Ibrahim, who incidentally has gone out of his way not to publicize his joint U.S. citizenship, then basically we run the risk, in effect, of corroborating the very propagandistic claims that were being made by the government. I think it's extremely important that in this case, the U.S. government approach the matter much more programmatically, thinking in terms of the promotion of democracy and political reform, rather than focusing on one individual. The background to last week's decision was that many of us built a tremendous amount of pressure in the press. Tom Friedman wrote a very eloquent piece in the New York Times. I had a piece in the L.A. Times. There were a number of other pieces. The government was in a position where it had to respond, and this is really a very minimalist response, and unfortunately it also very much isolates the case to Saadeddine.
Let me bring Neil Hicks in on this if I can, because, Neil, you're in the business of drawing people's attention to specific cases. Richard's saying that it may be problematic to focus in on the one person, but if the administration was to choose to make a cause out of one particular person, you're saying that perhaps this is the best one to work with.
Well, not necessarily. I agree with what Richard was saying. It's important to look at the, you know, the context which has permitted Saadeddine Ibrahim to be prosecuted and sent to prison, and to change that context. And as Richard pointed out, he's not alone. There are his four colleagues who are in prison with him, and scores of others who are in prison for their nonviolent political views in Egypt at this time. We need to see a change in the legal framework so that these kinds of prosecutions no longer happen. And specifically with respect to the promotion of civil society and non-governmental organizations, we need to see a change in the law of associations, because the current law of associations makes it virtually impossible for a non-governmental organization to be independent if it's going to be legally registered. You have to choose whether to be independent or to be legally registered, and this is a choice that NGOs shouldn't have to make.
Our telephone number is 1-800-423-TALK, 1-800-423-8255. Richard, thank you for that. We're going now to Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and Othman's joining us. Hi, Othman.
Yes, I would just like to actually agree with some of your callers. I think that one of the things that we need to look at is how this is going to affect public opinion in Egypt. I think just like there is criticism of the Egyptian government for selectively prosecuting Saadeddine Ibrahim, I think that the people of Egypt see President Bush's actions as being almost a selective prosecution of Egypt for a number of reasons. Number one, as has been indicated, there are hundreds if not thousands of others who are in jail in Egypt, and so it's selective in that regard. Second thing, as I believe it was Amy who spoke earlier also indicated, that it seems to be selective to Egypt as well. There are many other countries who we're working with who are committing violations of human rights every single day, Israel being the prime example, and yet we do nothing about that.
I'm not sure that Israel is the prime example. If you look at the history of Pakistan and the U.S. decision to withhold foreign aid some years back as a result of the corruption that was in that country. But I want to let me take the nub of what you're bringing here, Othman, and ask the ambassador to comment on that question of whether or not Bush is speaking to the international community with this decision, whether or not he's speaking specifically to the Egyptian government, or whether or not he's trying in his way to address some of the concerns of ordinary Arab people, the street, as it's called.
Well, we have a serious problem with the street and ordinary Arab people because they do believe that we are two-faced, that we say one thing and do another thing, that we are engaging in activities such as trial by military court or detention without representation that we've been complaining about in countries like Egypt for a long time. Frankly, I used to make representations to not only Egypt, to other countries that I've been ambassador to about these very issues. And the actions of the, no matter how necessary they may seem at the moment, do damage us intensely when we're overseas. I think that this is a narrow case, and it is appropriate. It is very difficult in diplomacy to take up a broad case when you don't have standing. This is under the laws of Egypt. We can complain about the laws, which I believe are overly restrictive, and certainly in this case were badly executed. But we cannot have as much impact as when we have actual U.S. interests involved, and that's the point of making this case an example where a U.S. citizen is involved.
Mustafa, your perspective of how this will be seen on the street, whether or not the U.S. will be seen to be living up to or living by its talk?
No, unfortunately, this would be seen also as an example of, you know, the selective policy of the U.S. Government. And I think it is not good for Saadeddin Ibrahim that the American government emphasizes his American nationality. I know from him that he did not use his American passport, that he got his American passport under special conditions in the 1960s when he was in the U.S. and he was denied his Egyptian nationality, so he got the American passport, but he does not use it. And he was seen for a long time in the Arab world as an Arab nationalist, taking, in fact, you know, almost, you know, what you would consider extremist positions. So, you know, to have him being defended now by the U.S., which is seen by, you know, the Arab public opinion, not only men and women on the street, but, you know, enlightened, you know, educated Arabs, Arab scholars. The U.S. is seen as, you know, taking, you know, all the time the side of Israel. So to have, you know, the U.S., you know, defending Saadeddin Ibrahim because he is American, I don't think this would serve him very well. I think it would have been much more effective if the U.S. Was consistent in its respect for human rights all the way in its foreign policy in general. In this case, I think its intervention would have been credible.
Connection listeners, is consistency or the lack of consistency the problem that the United States has to overcome in managing its foreign affairs abroad? Take this moment to say thank you to Ambassador Ned Walker for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Ambassador Walker was U.S. Ambassador to Egypt from 1984 to 1988, and our conversation continues after the break. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.
Funding for The Connection is made possible by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. My name's Dick Gordon. This hour we're talking about the U.S. decision late last week to withhold a request for some additional aid from Egypt. It is in response to the recent conviction of Saadeddin Ibrahim, a 63-year-old sociology professor at the American University of Cairo, also the head of the Ibn Khaldun Center for Development Studies in Cairo. My guests are Mustafa El Saidi, professor of political science at Cairo University, Neil Hicks, director of Middle East Program Lawyers Committee for Human Rights. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. And to Louisville, Kentucky, Mokhtar is on the line. Hi, Mokhtar.
Yeah, how are you, sir?
Fine, thanks.
Good. Yes, I would like to mention that I think the decision of Mr. President Bush of holding aid to Egypt is a great idea, but we need more action because we know that the United States is a guardian of democracy in the world and should not support regimes like the Egyptian government or Jordan's or any regimes like
that. So what else would you have the president do?
Yeah, more, like holding at least a hearing at the United States Congress to see more, I mean, tough decision that is no aid without democracy, because democracy be strong when, free expression, when people express. And Dr. Saeed Ibrahim, the champion of the democracy and human rights in the Arab world, in Islamic world.
Maxa, let me ask you a question. If the president were to withhold a substantial part of foreign aid to a country like Egypt, I mean, it could be another, but like Egypt, why do you think it would make a bigger difference?
It will make a huge difference because we know as a fact that Egyptian government get the only support from the United, the only fund like supporting the regime today is the United States. In of course, they are a great ally to the United States in the Middle East, and will make a lot of huge difference in and will help the Egyptian people to know that America is with them. United States of America now, after the September 11, is a new policies, what means democracy with aid. No aid is no democracy, and the same thing.
Mustafa El Sayed, let me ask you to join us on Mukhtar's point, because I'm not entirely sure when we talk about the democracy that exists in Egypt, whether or not people, consider it to be the type of democracy, even in principle, that the United States should be supporting, given the way that political opponents to Mubarak have been jailed. So by being tougher, by hitting harder, would it make a difference?
Well, we have to know the facts. You know, the amount of economic assistance that Egypt gets is something like $650 million a year. And this is going to decrease, I think, 5%, every year. And we get something like $1 billion, out of the Suez Canal. Mm-hmm. And we get more from tourism and remittances of Egyptians abroad. And there is a call to increase our exports. So I don't think cutting, economic assistance would affect us very much. Of course, we should look for alternatives to U.S. Military assistance. But I must say that, giving assistance to Egypt is compatible with U.S. National interests. In this way, the U.S. government can have meaningful dialogue with the Egyptian government. And I think in many cases, what the American government suggested, was accepted, except matters which relate to what the Egyptian government considers, affecting its survival, its stability. I would like also to add that the U.S. is not really interested in promoting democracy in Egypt, because promoting democracy in Egypt means that the Islamists, and I do not mean, Islamists who are willing to take up arms against the government, but, Islamists like the Muslim Brothers, who adopt a peaceful path to political participation, their power in Egypt would increase. I do not think that they would come to the government, but, definitely their presence in the
Vocal
assembly,
opposition than they
will become
now.
More vocal, and they are very critical of the U.S. So I don't think the U.S. government would like to see more Islamists, in the Egyptian People's Assembly. I don't think the U.S. government would like to see the Islamists having more voice in Egyptian domestic and foreign policies. And the same thing applies also to other countries. So I don't think, in the final analysis, I don't think the U.S. government is really interested in promoting democracy in the Arab world, because the winners, at least in the short term, would be the Islamists, who are seen as, opponents of U.S. policies.
And Neil Hicks, there's a lot of pride in Egypt. There always has been. The Egyptian foreign minister, in response to the Bush move, said, "You can't pressure us. You have never been able to pressure us, and you're not going to do it with this move either." And yet, going back to the point that Mukhtar is raising, if the United States were to use its foreign aid in a more weighty manner to reward or punish countries for the level of democracy, would it make a difference?
I don't think that foreign assistance should be used, generally speaking, in a punitive manner. Much better to use it to encourage the promotion of democracy and these issues we're talking about. I want to respond to Mustafa's point, because I think there are two sides to this argument. Of course, he's right that the U.S. has not been in favor of promoting democracy in Egypt and indeed throughout the region over the past 20 or 30 years. However, I think times are changing. There's been a gradual change in that now there's a much greater recognition of the importance of democracy to economic and social development in general. And it's seen that it's necessary to have participatory government, transparent government, in order to see social and economic development. So foreign assistance in general is getting much more connected to these political indicators. But, of course, the big change has been September the 11th. And now there is a realization here in the United States that autocratic government in a country like Egypt can actually harm our national security because it produces the type of extremists who commit attacks like the September the 11th attacks. So now there's a recognition that we have an interest in terms of our own national security in seeing gradual progress towards democratization and participatory government in Egypt so that people in Egypt do not become so angry and so frustrated with the system under which they live that they are encouraged to commit terrible acts of violence.
Mustafa, Neil says that times are changing, particularly after September 11th. Is he right?
No, I don't think so. I think, you know, this is an argument which is promoted, you know, in the U.S. media, but it is completely unfounded. The Egyptians who took part in the September 11th, you know, attacks had been away from the country for a very long time. And in fact, Islamists who remained in Egypt are committed to peaceful action. In fact, the organizations to which those people belong in Egypt have abandoned armed struggle as a way to come to power. In fact, the people who are promoting this view in Egypt are trying to say that, you know, terrorism has nothing to do with U.S. foreign policy. And I think this is the basic point. You know, even if we have democratic governments in the Arab world and the U.S. maintains this, you know, extremely biased policy, I think there will be, you know, crazy young people who will take up arms against the American government. So I think, you know, this matter should be spelled very, very clearly. You know, people in the Arab world are frustrated because of the bias in the U.S. foreign policy. And, you know, the question of school curriculum or what is written in newspapers.
But isn't what Neil's saying is that that bias is changing, that this is a gesture of, or at least a symbolic gesture of change in that?
No. I do not attach really much importance to this. You know, I am sympathetic with Saladin Ibrahim, and I'm really very sad that, you know, the second trial ended in this way. But I think this was, you know, a measure, you know, completely free of charge for the administration of President Bush. The package of aid to Egypt has not been affected. And, you know, Egypt, you know, asked for this additional aid because Israel has asked for this. And the American administration is opposed to any increase of expenditure in the budget. So I think, you know, it was, you know, very easy for President Bush to say, well, I'm not going to allow any increase of expenditure.
Because I wasn't going to give you the money in the first place.
Yeah.
1-800-423-8255. And we're joined now on the line from Boston by Rafat. Hi, Rafat.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I think cutting the aid and that it's not a very strong message to this kind of regimes who are have a long history of human rights violations and et cetera.
But do you think it's the responsibility or the role of a country like the United States to do whatever it can to alter the policy of another country like that?
Yes, and I think when we're talking about Egypt right now, I think the position of the U.S. policy about cutting aid is not only because of this incident. I think because maybe because it is of the Egyptian government position about invading Iraq. When we are looking, because it is like double standard, and we're going to add this point about the double standard. Look at Turkey. If we look at Turkey and their human rights violation, it's been for God knows how long, and also plus religion rights, religion practice rights violations, and there's nothing happened to them. We never see any sanctions against Turkey.
Were you listening at the point when Ambassador Walker said, yeah, it's probably because Ibrahim holds an American passport. That's what makes the distinction here.
Maybe one of the reasons. But I think the other reason is because of what's going on about Iraq and the U.S. Invasion. You know, when we look at, you know, Egypt is against the invasion. And this happened to them. Turkey is not against the invasion. And nothing mentioned about Turkey. And they have a long history of a human rights violation, religion violation, and we never hear anything about it from the U.S. government.
But it's not, Rafat, like Egypt's getting completely cut off. They're close to, you know, getting close to their annual $2 billion.
I wish they will cut off them, Israel, and any other country who are, they have a long history of a human rights violation. Turkey and all other regimes, because none of them is doing good.
So, Neil Hicks, is that what the U.S. has to face in terms of rationalizing the position that it's taken so far, that it needs to explain why a certain amount of aid is being withheld in this country and not in that country? Is that part of a dilemma that Bush may have created for himself with this decision?
Well, I hope the administration actually doesn't go down that path and get into arguing very tiny specific points. I would much prefer that the administration linked back to its own statements about the importance of promoting democracy and human rights in the Muslim world, and say how this step is part of that broader policy goal, which the administration is quite properly working for.
But linking to the statements, well, might work. Linking to the actions, as Mustafa points out, is less persuasive.
Well, so far the administration has not said very much about why it has taken this step. You know, the information was prized out of them by a Washington Post journalist, Peter Slevin, and there have been statements from spokespeople from the State Department and from the White House. No senior official has stood up and said, we have done this and this is why. Mm-hmm. I think there is now an opportunity for somebody from the administration, preferably President Bush, to stand up and say, this case is symbolic of these issues that we care about in Egypt and among all our friends in the Middle East. And we hope very much that they will listen to what we're trying to say, because our foreign assistance program has as an objective promoting civil society and human rights. And this is something which the Egyptian government itself has agreed to. So it's not something on which the two governments have a disagreement.
Okay.
So they should be able to work together to actually implement that in practice.
Rafat, thanks a lot for your question and for joining us. Mustafa, you began the program by saying that using foreign aid as a means of foreign policy wasn't a particularly smart thing to do. If that's in fact what the Bush administration is on about here, if it's not, and Bush wants to be heard, what should he be doing? What should he be saying?
I think he should respect the wish of all Arab peoples and all Arab governments not to go to war against Iraq. I mean, this is, you know, U.S. is associated in the minds of many people with respect for human rights. And, you know, all peoples in the Arab world, all governments of the Arab world are opposed to military action against Iraq. And nevertheless, you know, the U.S. president is going ahead with this.
But what about making some kind of symbolic change in Egypt, because that's where we are with this? I mean, if it's not a symbolically useful gesture,
be? You know, yeah, if he takes, you know, a general stand on human rights in Egypt, I think this would be much better than just, you know, singling out, you know, Saadeddine Ibrahim.
Mustafa El Sayed, thanks for being with us on the program.
You're most welcome.
Professor El Sayed is from Cairo University. Neil Hicks, thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
Neil Hicks, director of the Middle East Program at the Lawyers Committee for Human Rights. We talked earlier with Ned Walker, former ambassador to Egypt. He now directs the Middle East Institute in Washington, D.C. You're welcome to continue this conversation online. You'll find us at our website, theconnection.org. Our program is produced by Sean Carberry, Sarah Field, Kelly Jones, Allison McAdam, Lindsay Miller, Tara Murphy, Christina Rousseau, and Doug Sugars. Graham Smith is our senior producer. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.
Funding for The Connection is made possible by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be.